This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, I read with great interest that Google announced that they would be shutting down their personal health record portal, Google Health, at the end of the year.
I was amazed. I'm not used to Google shutting anything down. Usually what Google touches turns to Google gold. And certainly they were a real innovator in trying to make electronic health records, really personal health records, available to the general population.
They are, as you said, usually ahead of their time and oftentimes successful at what they did. But, you know, still in healthcare, many medical providers haven't segued over to the electronic health record yet. And at the same time, the federal government is doing all it can in the upcoming year to try to encourage practices to adopt electronic health records.
And from where we sit, looking around the country and talking to many groups, it looks to me like that pace of acceleration, with or without, because of or in spite of the federal incentives to get to meaningful use of electronic health records, the pace is really moving forward in the provider practices. So it's really another question about the use of personal health records. I'm not sure people see that as a need the way they now see Facebook as a need they didn't know they had before it was available.
Well, but one thing that Facebook did, it was efficient, effective, and elegant, and Google Health really wasn't elegant, and they have to work on that. I think people are ready for it, but it needs to meet their needs.
And certainly, I think you're absolutely right. And another concern is whether Google ever got the trust factor with the public about the storage of their medical records as much as they trust their current system of having it tucked away in their provider's office.
Again, I think we will see over the next couple of years as other developers jump into that space. And I think they will get it right because there's a market out there for it.
And that market does drive companies to innovate. And certainly Google is looking hard at integrating wellness data, like information about exercise, nutrition, or your personal health improvement plan. That, based on the number of apps we see available, seems like a general need and interest from the population.
You know, there's even interest in behavioral health apps with sites like Mood 24/7 that's developed by John Hopkins University. We're also familiar with Moody Me app and Mood Tracker. Hey, I'm feeling pretty good today. Let me mark that down on my app.
Go right ahead. And maybe when all is said and done, Google gave up a little too early. And some people are now asking Google to make their software available as open source so that anybody can set up their own personal health record portal. And it seems to me like that might be feasible.
Well, there are a lot of folks in that space, Microsoft Health Vault, Dossier, and many others. And certainly in the open space, open source market, I think we'll see more developers working their magic.
And moving away from what Google's been up to, let's talk about the federal government and a new and very fascinating program called their Mystery Health Shopper Program, something that has been done in states for a long time where people can call and say they're a patient and see how long it'll take to get an appointment.
Actually, in the private sector, many companies use the Mystery Shopper just to call up and see how the public is received by their workers, and I think it's a great idea. But nobody likes the government looking over their shoulder, and perhaps they should have subbed this out to a group like the Institute of Medicine or someone else.
Well, I think this all stemmed from some recent press about patients, particularly if they were on a public form of insurance or had no insurance, trying to get an appointment and not being able to be seen. But, Mark, if the federal government had asked us our opinion, I think we would have made one suggestion. Don't call and say, I'm a patient with a cough and I need to be seen. The real question is, I'm a patient who would like to establish a medical home with my primary care provider. Can I become your patient? That's really where the issue of access is, and maybe we'll get them to change their script.
You know, I think it's a good idea, and also this is going to be important baseline data as the government is engaged in trying to create more access for all of us, and we have to see how well they succeed, and getting this information will be helpful in measuring that.
And certainly fundamental to what we all anticipate happening in just 2 short years when the health insurance exchanges are up, Medicaid is expanded, and more people are seeking a medical home and a primary care provider.
Joining us today to explore this issue and others is Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Governor Herbert has been a strong advocate for health care being driven as much as possible by the free market.
and a real innovator. And to him, this means less federal government control, more options for the individual states on how health care reform should be brought about that's consistent with what their state wants to see. We're delighted that Governor Herbert can be with us today.
But no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. Or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. If you're a social media aficionado, you can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and also follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We love to hear from you. Now, before we speak with Governor Herbert, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, for the headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The American Medical Association and other doctors' groups want debt negotiations between Republicans and Democrats to include a permanent fix to the formula that Medicare uses to pay doctors. Congress has continued to delay scheduled cuts to the formula that's used to reimburse Medicare providers, leaving doctors on edge and more headaches for Congress. And according to the AMA, a permanent repeal to the formula would have cost $48 billion in 2005, compared with a price tag of nearly $300 billion to the cuts that are scheduled for January. In an article that appeared in the Washington Post, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi indicated that her party will make Medicare their number one issue in the 2012 elections. In the article, Pelosi said the Democratic Party's three most important issues are Medicare, Medicare, and Medicare. Pelosi believes her party can win back the House in 2012 by attacking Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan's Republican plan to give Medicare the biggest overhaul in its 40-year history. Diabetes rates have doubled worldwide. According to a new report in the British journal Lancet, more than 347 million patients have diabetes globally and nearly 25 million in the U.S. This means rates of diabetes have nearly tripled in the U.S. and more than doubled worldwide since 1980. The Wall Street Journal says that the new rates are higher because of a more comprehensive calculation of global prevalence. In turn, costs associated with diabetes care are expected to balloon as well in the coming years. In 2007, costs rose to $174 million in the U.S., according to the latest data from the American Diabetes Association.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Governor Gary R. Herbert. He was sworn in as Utah's 17th governor in 2009. Welcome, Governor Herbert.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be with you, Mark and Margaret.
Governor, Utah began reforming health care long before health reform was signed into law, starting discussions back in 2005. And your General Assembly passed in 2007 Utah's health insurance exchange, a cornerstone of your reform. And while all states must have these exchanges up and running by 2014, tell us why Utah is way ahead of the curve of other states and what drove Utah to be such an innovator in health reform.
Well, I think it's a lot of reasons. I think we've been kind of that old pioneer spirit, you know, try to find a better way to do things. And healthcare has been a topic on everybody's mind for many, many years. And here in Utah, we've just decided we would try to tackle it. We think states throughout the country ought to be tackling it individually. In fact, as laboratories of democracy, we probably have ways to, in fact, address healthcare that the federal government would not be quite as nimble about approaching. And we'll learn from each other, by the way. I think we'll learn from our successes and our failures. And so, as you already mentioned, you know, 6 years ago, we started looking at health care and seeing what we could do to, in fact, slow down the rising costs, see if we can't find better ways to have access to health care, help our small business community in particular to address what was becoming the biggest expense item in their balance sheet. And that's healthcare. And hence, out of that effort came the Utah Healthcare Exchange.
Well, you refer to states as laboratories of democracy, and we often say that our states are laboratories of innovation, so it sounds like we're thinking on the same path with that. But, you know, when we look at these exchanges, we've really got two examples. We've got Massachusetts in the east and Utah in the west. And I understand that your approach to the exchange is quite different from Massachusetts. I think that would be really interesting for our listeners to hear about. What are the key differences between your approach and the Massachusetts exchange, and maybe a little bit about why?
Well, the key issue difference is we don't have a mandate. We're trying to use the invisible hand of the marketplace, you know, a free market society, and let the private sector find ways to attract customers rather than have some kind of a mandate that you will be a customer. And that's the biggest difference. We've also are trying to, in fact, control the escalating costs, and so we have what's called a defined contribution approach as opposed to a defined benefit approach. And so each employer can decide how much they're going to contribute to the employee's health care and pick a number. It could be $500, $600, $700 a month. Then the employee can go to the web page, really the exchange. It's kind of like a facilitator, ability for them to match up their dollars that they control now as the consumer with available plans through a web page. And we have right now about 146 different options available to employees with four different major insurance carriers. And so if Gary Herbert goes there, he can look with my money. If I've got $700 a month to spend, I can find a plan that suits my unique needs as Gary Herbert and family. And I can add to it or take from it as I see fit. But I'm in control of spending my own dollars and buying the coverage that I uniquely need, no more, no less. And so we find efficiencies there, and I think economies of scale, which will take place. And now the business person has a controlled number. It's not going to escalate. It's not going to fluctuate. They control what their expense side is, which improves their bottom line. The consumer is in control of purchasing the insurance that they need, uniquely so for themselves and their family. And it's a win-win all the way around.
Governor, the free marketplace is certainly driven by access to information. And Utah's website at the Office of Healthcare Statistics is a real treasure trove of health information. It looks at how Utah compares to the rest of the country and gives data specific to cost and performance by providers. I'm wondering how Utah came to be committed to transparency and how transparency and information is playing a role in how you think about health reform in Utah.
Well, as we've analyzed the healthcare issue, and it's a very complex issue, and there's a lot of different facets, and I think we need to, in fact, define healthcare reform a little better in this country than we've done in the past. But for us, we believe that competition means you've got to have good information. You can't shop and compare if you don't know what it is that you're shopping for, and comparing it apples with apples, and do a cost comparison analysis for quality and service. And so having good data and having good information will allow the consumer now to, in fact, shop and compare and find out where they get the best bang for their buck when it comes to getting health care. And unfortunately, we've kind of gotten away from that when it comes to health care. We shop very carefully when we're buying bananas and cereal at the grocery store. We have a lot of different options out there that we compare, not only brand with brand, but store with store. And we get the thing that we're looking for the best and get the highest quality at the lowest price. We need to introduce that same kind of transparency and openness so that the consumer can shop and compare for health care. And we do it here in the state of Utah. There are places, for example, if you were going to get your appendix taken out, there's some parts of the state that will have better quality at lower cost than other parts. And that principle of free market and choice takes effect, and the competition will drive down the price and drive up the quality. That's the way it's worked in our country, and that's what we're trying to do with health care here in Utah.
Governor, the state of Utah is so much further ahead, of course, with the exchange process, since you have already established one. But one of the unknowns for Utah and Massachusetts is how the requirements for the exchange will match up with the requirements under the Affordable Care Act. And my guess is that you've continued to fine-tune and improve your own exchange, even without knowing what's going to come down from the federal government. We'd be curious about what kinds of improvements you've made since you first established it, and what's the outcome of it, particularly in terms of the percentage of uninsured in your state, or any quality measures, indications that people use the ER less and primary care a little more. Those are all things I know must be very important to you in the state.
Well, one thing I would tell our listeners is this is a work in progress. We certainly are at the very beginning stages of this and its implementation, and we are learning as we go. The Affordable Care Act is going to have some kind of mandate that comes to all states to have some kind of a health exchange. The concern I've got is that in their mandating, they, in fact, take away flexibility. And we're doing what's appropriate for Utah's unique demographics and our own unique situation. And I expect Colorado will find their own niche and other states. And they're not going to be the same. That's the problem with what's coming out of Washington, D.C., is a one-size-fits-all approach, which doesn't make probably anybody too happy. So I think 50 states doing their own thing, they'll find uniqueness, will learn from each other and improve. One thing we've done is we've got the insurance department that now audits our prices and makes sure that things are competitive, keeping an eye on making sure there's level playing fields, that we're not having some unintended consequence that comes out of this. We started with about 100 employees and with 3,000 people being insured, and we're planning by 2012 to have 25 to 30,000 people that will be insured. And so we're growing. It's not as fast as if you mandate everybody to do it. This is a slower process, but it also is very inexpensive. We're spending probably about $500,000 or $600,000 total to put an exchange in place. So again, we're going slow and methodically. We're learning as we go. We're going to have a health exchange summit. It's called the Utah Health Exchange Summit here, where we have over 30 other states in America coming to Utah to learn about how we're doing it. I think in that process, there's going to be some good discussion, some give and take, and we will, in fact, Utah, be a big winner by having input from all these different states as they ask questions and learn about what we're doing. So again, I think that's part and parcel of the process as we learn from each other, discuss issues, and move on to important things as far as quality, cost, accessibility, and how do you get from here to there from the current system we've got to something that's better. So it's going to be a lively discussion, and again, this is a work in progress, and we're certainly at the beginning stages of this effort.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Governor Herbert, you have a strong commitment to states taking the lead in healthcare reform, as if you quite nicely articulated. And Utah has been a leader as other states have been planning for their exchanges, and we know that a number of them, Colorado is reportedly looking closely at Utah as it plans its final legislation. But tell us a little more, though, about what you think the role should be for the federal government. Certainly, it can't be left up to all the states. Should there be some minimum standards of which then the states build upon? I'm trying to get at your philosophy here, and I certainly understand in the notion that states are laboratories and they are fonts of opportunities for innovation, but would we have programs like Medicaid or Medicare without the federal government at least laying the groundwork for them?
Well, we certainly do have a national health care system called Medicaid and Medicare, and it's in place. I think we need to leave flexibility to the states. There can be some minimum standards, but I would emphasize they ought to be minimum and let the states build upon that. I'd much rather have a block grant of money given to the states and based on some kind of proportionality, and so California would get a lot more money than would, say, Utah. But we will then be able to find better ways to spend the money without having to say, Mother, may I, to the federal government. I'll just give you an example. We, in our Medicaid reform efforts here in Utah, wanted to go paperless. It will save us about $6.3 million and provide us with better service to our Medicaid recipients. Unfortunately, the rules in Medicaid out of Washington, D.C. say you cannot go paperless. We made a request. We asked for a federal waiver of that requirement, and the interesting thing is we got a denial of that request sent to us by, of all things, email. They sent us a paperless reply to say, no, you can't do this. Well, this has been silly, And actually, I talked personally with President Obama and said, hey, I've got a great idea of how we can save $6.3 million in Utah and close to $1 billion if other states, in fact, embrace the concept of going paperless. And he said, hey, sounds like a good idea to me if it's voluntary. And I said, it is voluntary. And so he called upon Secretary of Health Sebelius to, in fact, work with Utah. We now are signing an agreement to allow us to have a federal waiver to go paperless. Well, that's an example of the creativity and innovation that comes from a state. And if the federal government just let us be these laboratories of democracy within an umbrella, some kind of a skeleton approach as far as what we should be doing as a minimum, I think each state will build a program with the available funds that they have and match it with funds of their own. And although they will not be the same, they will, in fact, be flexible and I think serve their demographics better than one size fits all that becomes more costly and ends up causing like a state like Utah, to take money out of education, for example, or other critical needs in order to fund the growing demand for Medicaid. So we've got to work together on it. It's not just the states alone. It's certainly not the federal government alone. It really is a requirement for us to work together, and I think giving the states flexibility with a kind of an umbrella approach from the federal government.
Governor Herbert, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are happening throughout the world, and I certainly am not an expert on everything, but I know here in Utah we have a significant medical device sector of our economy, where we have with Edward Life Sciences, for example, Merit Medical, Fresenius, some other different medical device companies that have significant market share, not only in America, but in the world. And it really fuels not only good health, but it fuels economic expansion and jobs. And frankly, as we look around the world, those countries which are the wealthiest just happen to be the healthiest. So it follows that we all ought to be concentrating on grow the economy, have a healthy economy, and it will follow we'll have healthier people. People have more disposable income, have healthier lifestyles, better nutrition, better prevention as far as our health care approach goes. And so it goes, at least in my review of what we're trying to do here in Utah, let's grow the economy, and in return we're going to find better health. I think there's a number of countries out there that are trying to find innovation and creativity. I think that comes mostly from the private sector, and I think as we free up the private sector and don't inhibit their ability to be creative and to have that risk-reward which we call capitalism in a free market, we're going to find great success out there. As government steps in and inhibits that or unlevels the playing field, we're going to have a stifling of that ability in a free market to be creative. And again, as you look at our founding of our country and what we've done just in the last 100, 120 years, it's come from free market principles that have, where people said, you know what, if I can build a better mousetrap, I can make money, I'll be better off, and the community will be better off because of my new invention. Well, that is no more true in healthcare than anything else. So let's unleash that power of creativity and innovation, and every state ought to be doing it. 50 laboratories of democracy, finding better ways to do things with research and technology, and in doing so, we'll improve everybody's health.
Today, we've been speaking with Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Mark and Margaret.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea comes to us from Massachusetts, where three health centers are experimenting with a new tactic for combating obesity, prescribing more fruits and vegetables. The project, Prescription Produce, centers on doctors prescribing their patients coupons from local farmers' markets. The coupons amount to $1 a day for each member of the patient's families. Although farmers market voucher programs have been used in Massachusetts for decades, this project is unique because it specifically targets obesity, and doctors actually write prescriptions that are filled at farmers markets rather than simply issuing coupons. The target patients are obese or at risk of becoming obese, and most live in neighborhoods where healthy produce is expensive and hard to come by. The project's goal is not only to increase patients' access to fruits and veggies, but in the short run, to increase daily consumption of these essential foods by one serving a day. On a larger time scale, participants hope patients will establish consistently healthier eating habits. The pilot project will include 50 families at 3 Massachusetts health centers. The project's designers see this program as vital because long-lasting health improvements will only endure if an increase in fruits and vegetables is coupled with an equal or decrease in sugary, high-fat processed foods. So patients will learn how to make better diet choices while receiving the resources to make those choices a reality. To gauge the pilot's success, doctors will monitor their patients' eating patterns and attitudes, body mass index, and weight change. The Ceiling and Visibility Unlimited Foundation, which sponsors the program, is also working on expanding it through a year-round partnership with local grocery stores so that the closing of our farmers market in the winter will not set patients back. By increasing immediate access to essential fruits and vegetables, the Massachusetts Prescription Produce Project is tackling obesity head-on and helping people establish lifelong healthy eating habits. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.